If it makes you feel any better about Flight and the Navigator, all of those animals were either displaced or going to a new home.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, yeah, they were like endangered, and that's what the robot ship was doing.
They were also all either puppets or some sort of mechanical creations, so not real.
Oh no, they weren't real.
You mean the alien with the big eye that goes?
I'm sorry to break it. 30 years from now, it's not real.
I have a cold. I'm not actively demented.
Welcome, Apodders, to this month's podcast. I'm Sean Hall.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm. And you know what we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Yeah, why, Naomi?
I've been trying to mindfully love on you. And I was like, what is a movie? I mean, we haven't done a great deal of animated films. And what is something that Jen would really like to talk about? And so I suggested The Transformers, the movie from 1986. And I did not, in my mindfulness, realize that we have all selected movies that we don't do because we don't want to ruin it. But I don't think we're going to ruin it, honey. I think we're going to have a good time, and you can still love it as much as you have always loved the Transformers.
Well, thank you, and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, honey.
It isn't like even my favorite animated film, so that's fine.
I think it's great that you're justifying it, because when I had asked you earlier, you were like, this is like my Tank Girl. So does this mean we're doing Tank Girl at some point?
I will submit to a Tank Girl review.
Okay. I will submit to a Kung Fu Hustle review.
Ooh.
Because that's the one that I don't want to hear anything negative about.
Yeah. Well, there's not much negative to say about Kung Fu Hustle.
Not really. So, Sean, is there a movie that you don't want to hear anything negative about?
No, I feel free on every movie. You can tear every movie apart you've ever wanted to, because we've already done Spice World.
Well, we didn't do it on this podcast. We didn't do it on this podcast. We did it on a guest appearance on
Cinema Collateral Cinema.
Yeah. So feel free to check that episode out. And, you know,
was that Reels of Justice?
No.
Oh yeah, because we had to fight for it.
It was Reels of Justice.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. Collateral Cinema was The Goonies.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sorry. Then there's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which, you know, and then Cabin in the Woods and whatever I feel like, you know. Like
movies that you really enjoy. Mm-hmm. But you seem to not mind too.
No, I like tearing apart movies, even the ones I enjoy.
So you are essentially the Zen master of Shocked and Applaud.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody else is just still like in their flesh, and you're just like, no, I've ascended.
He's got an opinion, but he's also got the facts.
Well, that and the fact that I can watch really awful movies and still like them, you know?
Yeah.
Like The Barbarians with the twin wrestlers like from like 1982. I watched that. I also watched Uncle Sam from 1997 the other day. So, I mean, I just watch crap.
I eat McDonald's and I think it's good.
I mean, I do too. Those nugs.
Yeah.
Them fries.
Oh, those fries.
Occasionally
yeah.
The Sprite if you need your brain to fizz.
Yeah.
Although I did start Repo, the Genetic Opera, and I got about halfway through and I was like, oof. Oof.
We were driving to work the other day, and on my favorite list, I have... I forget the name of the song, but I have a song from Repo the Genetic Opera. And he's like, man, when's the last time you watched that? It really has been decades. And so it would be the kind of thing that would inspire you to watch it. But is it really like...
Well, you know, I was watching it with Maddie, and at some point Madeline was like, oh my God, I cannot take this. It is... They don't stop singing. And I'm like, well, it's because it's an opera.
Yeah, which is a step up from a musical in terms of like not dialogue.
Yeah, yeah, no. I think it was just all the blood and guts and gore. So, you know.
Musicals originally came from operettas, which are like operas with more dialogue. That's kind of the...
That's clever. I, yeah. know, I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. Another movie on my I don't want to hear anything negative about it is the musical Pirates of Penzance with Kevin Kline and Angela Lansbury and Linda Ronstadt. I mean, that's... I mean, I have like a lot of movies that I don't want to hear anything negative about. So,
oh man, if you guys would, I would love to hear Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Holy crap.
Your wife has made me watch that movie several times. And every time she puts it on, my brain goes to the lyric that is, you ain't get no sleep when you sleep with sheep.
Yep.
And then the fact that you can just take women. I mean, the patriarchy is not good with this one.
They justify it by pointing out that Roman soldiers did it. The Romans never did anything awful.
It's actually a true story about the Sabine women, but they call them the Sabine women because, you know.
Sabine.
Fit to be tied.
Thank you.
It's great.
Run that by your wife before we do it.
The worst part of that movie is at the very end when all of the townsfolk come to rescue the women after the snow falls or the snow thaws, and they hear a baby, and all the women are just sort of like, "It's my baby," and then it's shotgun weddings for all of them. Yeah,
it's been a while. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
We rewatched it. And I'm like, they are lucky they didn't get shot before that happened. You know, or what's the other one she really likes? Oh, White Christmas.
Oh, that's good, though. I mean, not that. Yeah, no, it's good.
It's a good movie whose plot revolves around, I'm not going to tell you what I'm mad about, and I'm going to ruin the whole movie because we just can't have a conversation for 30 seconds. Because if I were to say, hey, I'm mad about this, then the whole movie would be over.
Half the films we watch are, if you had a 2-minute conversation, there would be no conflict here. It's why I have a problem with chick flicks. Because, like, if you just sent a text, mm-hmm. it would be over with.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Romeo, I took some poison, full stop.
I took poison, but I'm not going to die.
Yeah. Or like, we were supposed to meet at 6, but I got wrapped up and I had to meet my cousin, who happens to be attractive female.
You know...
If I don't say female, I mean attractive woman.
You know what's interesting about the rom-com, or that idea, is that it's very much based in like teenage reaction behavior. Like Romeo and Juliet is the first one, but they were... teenagers.
Yeah.
But all rom-coms are essentially miscommunication, and then you react, and instead of just talking it through, having a conversation, it just sort of, you know, simmers, and then it gets really hard, and then you have to put it into the sink, and you have to hope that the pan will soak and everything will come up, but it may not.
But you know what? You know what the opposite of a rom-com is?
An 80s movie that is created to sell more action figures?
Hell yeah.
An hour and a half long commercial.
I'm not mad about that. This whole time, I'm not mad about it. Okay, so, Jen, why don't you, since, I knew this movie existed, but I didn't know that there was a passionate fan base until we started dating. And that's it.
Yeah, I know several... people who claim to be men that can quote this movie pretty well. And I remember there's one movie that's like an independent movie. I can't remember what it's called now, but like two brothers continue to just quote from this movie. I was five. If we're going to get into how were we introduced to this movie, I was five. I watched it in the theater. I cried during certain points. And I am one of those people that was traumatized by this movie. And I still continue to watch the cartoon afterward. What about you, Lydia?
Obviously, through cultural osmosis, one of my favorite YouTubers, Lindsay Ellis, back in her Nostalgia Chick days, she reviewed this movie. But she also really liked the Transformers movies by Michael Bay. She has a whole series called The Whole Plate, where she breaks down the film using different film theories, like feminist theory, Marxist theory. Like, I know about it because I like her stuff and I like the way that she talks about it. We were rewatching it, and the entire time I kept asking, so at what point does Bumblebee pee on John Turturro? Because, like, I really like John Turturro, but then the movie peed on John Turturro. And I'm like...
Like, literally, there was a urination scene?
There was a scene where Bumblebee pops a cork. And I have not watched the Michael Bay Transformers movies, but I really like Lindsay Ellis' stuff. And so he literally pops a cork that is around where his hips are. And there's like something that's coming out of him, and he swivels his hips, and it's getting all on John Turturro. And at one point, Optimus Prime says, Bumblebee, stop lubricating the man. this is John Turturro. This is, oh, brother, where art thou, John Turturro? This is the Big Lebowski John Turturro. And he gets peed on, and he comes back for all of the movies. And this is why we love John Turturro. This is why I love John Turturro. I've never seen those movies. I think he is a Zen master.
I've never played Five Nights at Freddy's, but I love it by proxy because of all of the game theories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a huge, huge fan of the Michael Bay ones. The first one's kind of okay, and then they just kind of get worse progressively. There's some ghetto black stereotypes in the sequel, and it is a multi-billion-dollar movie franchise.
Right. They're actually making another one coming out this summer based on Beast Wars.
Yeah.
So if you ever wanted to see like a gorilla in a Transformer form.
But this one's got the actual RC in it, mm-hmm. and not just like some throwaway motorcycle character.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's something to appreciate about this movie is all of the characters have some kind of characterization. They have like, you can tell not just because of the sides that they're on, that they have pathos. They also have like opinions. They have like snappy one-liners. When you hear about like the quips in the Marvel movies nowadays, there's like, well, I can kind of see where that comes from because the people who made the Marvel movies are people who grew up with the Transformers movies. And those would give these like little, you know, snappy one-liners to the characters. And that gives you a way of identifying with it. I mean, like, Sean, you were talking about how Maddie loves Grimlock, one of the talking about stuff that happens later on. That Maddie loves one of the Dinobots, Grimlock. And then, Jen, I think you had mentioned that Grimlock is a fan favorite. And you can see why, because of the way that he's portrayed in this movie.
Sean, how did you come to this movie?
I'm going to admit something right now. I did not see this movie until we went to Jen's birthday party and we saw the 35th version on the big screen. I was given GoBots a lot when I was a kid because GoBots were cheaper than Transformers. So I have an affinity for GoBots. I didn't start buying Transformers till I actually got into high school and had my own money. So that would have been like 92. So by that time, the cartoons were pretty much over with. So I never actually saw this movie from beginning to end until we saw it in the big screen with you about like 2 or 3 years ago.
What a treat.
It was great.
That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was for Jen's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham had Rock Lords, and that's what I played with as a kid.
I actually have a Sean fact about the Rock Lords coming up later, which is funny.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mm-hmm. loved them. They just turned into balls.
Mm-hmm.
And Abe was a whiz at them.
Oh, man. Do you remember the McDonald's toys that came out? They turned like from robots into like...
Yes,
like
I had the French fry one and the milkshake one.
Or like the breakfast one that turned into a pterodactyl. Yeah.
Vaguely, but I think
the 80s were wild.
Yeah. They had really cool toys.
Mattel is releasing a series of Dungeons & Dragons characters that transform. So you can get like a 20-sided die that transforms into a dragon.
Or a beholder, I think, is the other one.
Oh, we're all getting those, right?
Yeah.
I'm saving up for the Lego set. Supposedly there's going to be a Lego dragon tower from D&D.
Okay.
It's probably going to come out with a movie that's coming out later this year.
Applauders, don't get the wrong opinion of us. We are not nerds. We just happen to watch movies and criticize them on a podcast and play Dungeons & Dragons together.
Yeah, and just for keeping us going, we're not going to get into the OGL license dispute right now. We're just going to skip that part and talk about Transformers.
Sounds good to me.
Transformers! More than meets the eye!
Oh, my voice is not up to even trying.
You got the touch.
You got the power. Okay. So I guess that means that now is time for Sean Facts.
Sean Facts. That button is so weird because I look over and I'm thinking you're talking, but you're not really.
It's pretty good. It's for consistency. Applauders, it is a treat that we have the actual Sean from Sean Facts here.
This is the second time that you've guessed it on the podcast, which
yeah.
is so amazing.
I'm going to do this part for you. I'm gonna have you guys play along. What do you think the budget of this movie was? Oh. How much did it cost to make?
I get to guess this time.
Yay!
But you know so many facts about this movie.
You probably are going to get it right. So how about you go last? I'll go first. I'm going to say... 86. It's animated, so it's probably up there price wise more than others. I'm going to say $25 million was the budget, and it made, I'm going to say it made $100 million back.
Okay.
I am thinking of 1985 money.
Okay. Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if they spent $7 million making this film. And I would guess that they made, I think it more than made its money. They had to have made $20, $25 million. Okay, I got to lock it but closer than that. I'm going to say $20 million.
Okay.
More on sales, though, like for sure.
Did you look this up, Jen? Do you know?
I printed your facts for you.
Did you read it? All right. Okay.
That's why I wanted you to go last. I totally planned that.
I agree with Naomi on the budget of $7 million. However, I actually know from own experience that this movie did not make its money back.
Oh.
But it probably did in toys.
So Naomi was really close. The budget was $6 million.
Hell yeah.
You can tell because the animation was...
janky?
Yeah, kind of. It made $5,800,000.
You know, for marketing, that's still pretty good because most marketing, you know, is just putting a bunch of money into something and hoping you get something back. And most of the time, you don't really get it back.
No, it made less money than it cost to make. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then all the toys and the fact that we're talking about it near 40 years later.
Maybe. I mean, I guess.
That's less you'd spend on a Super Bowl ad, maybe.
Now it is.
Let's just, the other fact I had was that concurrently the studio is also making a G.I. Joe movie, which I guess what is the voice of Starscream is also the voice of Cobra Commander. This movie did so badly, combined with the previous poor performance of My Little Pony, the animated movie came out the same year, that they put the G.I. Joe movie straight to video.
Yeah.
They were going to do a double feature and they were like, nope, we're just going to, yeah. And they canceled the Jim and the Holograms cartoon that they're going to make, movie that they're going to make too.
Six that I've counted so far. Transformers, G.I. Joe, He-Man, She-Ra, My Little Pony, Gem and the Holograms. That's six movies that we had, or six media that's based around marketing something that, you know, is the 80s were weird. There was a lot of cocaine in the 80s.
How can we get money out of these kids?
We're going to go ahead and make a really long commercial, and then we're going to call it a movie.
All right. Okay. So a lot of these facts I have are actually about death. So do you want the real deaths or the fake deaths first?
Let's do the real deaths. So that way the fake deaths kind of like mitigate the real deaths.
Okay.
You eat your vegetables before you have your fried chicken.
Transformers the movie is a final film featuring Orson Welles. He spent most of the day performing Unicron's voice on set on October 5th, and he died on October 10th. Mm-hmm. Shortly before his death, he told his biographer, "You know what I did this morning? I played the voice of a toy. I played the voice of a planet. I menaced somebody called something or other. I'm destroyed then. I plan to destroy whatever it is, thwarted, and I tear apart myself on screen." So he was pretty excited because he got to play a planet.
I'm glad that he had fun. And it kind of comes out in his performance. Mm-hmm.
This is also the last film role for Scatman Crothers. Tying that back, I believe The Shining is Naomi's favorite film.
It's not necessarily my favorite film, but it's the one that I really don't want to do on the podcast.
Like even more than Tank Girl.
Yeah, I'd rather do Tank Girl than that's the one I save for parties. That's the one I like to talk about with y'all off mic.
Yeah.
No, but Scatman Crothers is easily my second favorite character in all of The Shining. And as you know, he's Mr. O'Halloran, and he is the first death in the film. So mm-hmm.
I believe he's the only on-screen death.
Well, there's two.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess there's... Yeah. The ending.
But okay. We're not going to talk about The Shining because okay. Nobody's okay. Selected it yet.
All right. Okay. Okay.
But Naomi did mention, she looped it all back together. There is a Danny. It's Daniel, but there is a Danny in this movie too.
Danny and Scam Man. And he died. How long did he die after this?
I didn't write that. He lived till 19. He lived till November 22nd, 1986. So when this movie came out in the summer. So
this movie killed Orson Welles. And what was Scatman?
Scatman Crothers.
Scatman Crothers. This movie killed both of them.
All right. Here's a question for you guys. So we'll go back to a happy place. This movie came out in the middle of summer and did really poorly. Can you guess what it was up against the summer of 1986?
Cloak and Dagger.
That was 84.
But it was like the last movie we did.
I know. It was great.
It was.
Was it? Okay. Can I ask a tiny question?
Sure.
Was it up against something animated?
There are a lot of them. Let's see. Which one was? Let's see. There's one really big bomb, two sequels. Nope.
Was it a Star Wars-y one?
There was a science fiction one, a couple of them that summer.
Last Starfighter.
No, that was 85, I believe.
Dune.
I'm getting close.
84.
Was it Dune?
Nope. Crowded summer lineup, including Short Circuit.
Oh.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yeah.
Labyrinth.
Oh.
Big Trouble.
Since the Labyrinth?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. David Bowie's The Labyrinth.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, what?
The Karate Kid Part 2. Aliens. Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck traumatized me.
The Fly.
Oh, if you want to hear something hilarious about Howard the Duck, do listen to our Friends of the Podcast, not Saturday Morning Cartoons, the Infinite Backlog with Andy and Shane and sometimes another guy. And they talk about Howard the Duck at great length, and it is a messed up comic.
Oh, it is. Flight of the Navigator.
So essentially 1986 was the 2023 of the 80s.
Yeah, kind of.
Hey, all of those movies I watched on VHS as a kid. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them. Yeah. Multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Flight of the Navigator was the one that I watched like regularly.
Did you? Okay. In that, when he's shown all of the aliens that have been collected, and I don't know if that's okay. Did you want the little one that looked like a little monkey that was like big-eyed and it was like, arr!
The one that hang on to his finger? Yeah, because that was how it was designed.
Because I wanted it as a pet real bad.
Yeah, he got it as a pet.
And then they have these, on this planet, they have little finger-sized monkeys, and I've wanted one of those forever, too. Have you seen those?
Have
you heard about those?
Like on our actual planet?
They're a little finger, IRL. Like they're the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
They're like endangered, so I can't have one.
Right.
But I think that's unfair.
If it makes you feel any better about Flight and the Navigator, all of those animals were either displaced or going to a new home.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. They were like endangered, and that's what the robot ship was doing.
They were also all either puppets or some sort of mechanical creations, so not real.
Oh, no, they weren't real?
You mean the alien with the big eye that goes, ay, 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 ay.
I'm sorry to break it 30 years from now. It's not real.
I have a cold. I'm not actively demented.
I'll read the second death later. One of the facts I picked up just because I told you I was big into GoBots, but GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords also came out this year. It was an animated film based on the GoBots line, and it featured Margot Kidder, Telly Savalas, and Roddy McDowall. Anyway, yeah, so yeah, Rock Lords. There you go.
Also, fun fact. GoBots came out a few months before Transformers, the series. They're all based on toys, but the common belief is that GoBots was a ripoff on the commercial success of Transformers, and that's not true. They came out the same year.
That says something for the inequality in performance in a field that is determined by children,
mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Not all of the fruit ripens.
Okay, so the last Sean fact I have before we can just get these on the go is apparently this is the second movie that the Decepticon Shockwave appeared in. He was also in Aliens. In the med lab scene, just before Ripley reaches out to hug Newt after setting off the fire alarm, there's a futuristic piece of medical apparatus with three objects hanging off of it that can briefly be seen in the background. According to my notes, it is the Decepticon Shockwave repainted and purposed as a prop.
Oh.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when movies do that. Like in Phantom Menace, when they had the midi-chlorian counter, it was like, that looks really familiar. And it was one of these razors that you could only get in like the 90s where it had like a super wide handle and it was like gripped and it had those rubbery grips on them.
Yeah, they did that a lot. Like in Star Trek, a lot of the models were just like razor blades, like throwaway blades that they just put on the bottom of the ships and painted.
Okay,
yeah.
So
these look like nacelles.
I saw this at the MoPop Museum up in Seattle. The in Tank Girl, during the costume change scene at the Liquid Silver, Tank Girl dresses up and She walks out from there. The monitor's going, if you've performed all of these actions correctly, you should appear as thus, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like this generic white haired, white outfit. And then Tank Girl walks out and she is Tank Girled up and she's holding the earring gun. And she goes, ladies, lock up your men, which is one of my favorite things to quote of all time. The earring gun is, in fact, a glue gun that has a plastic test tube glued to the top of it. And it's got little plastic pearl beads inside of it. And I love it so much. I love the real world props of things. Just so good.
Practical effects from a production standpoint always like give me life, because it's like, oh, this is, because it's one thing if you like build a robot from scratch and suddenly that robot moves in a very realistic, you know, way, like with like some of the animatronics from Jim Henson's workshop, Creature Workshop. But then you have this whole other side of it where it's like, this is a thing that already exists and we're just going to paint it and repurpose it for another reason.
Change the lighting, put on the fog machine. Now that shoebox is a ghost trapping device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not how that works. But go on, Sean, please.
Oh, no, that was it.
Oh.
So that's it for Sean Facts, for everything that's outside of scene, right?
Yeah. I can catch these as we go along.
Okay. Sweet.
Maybe I'll bring this up at the end. No, I want to do it. I want to ask now. So I want to know what each of you would transform into.
Dang it, Jen. It's there in my notes.
Oh, okay.
No, it's going to happen. We should do it now.
And I want to know what your transformer name would be, too.
Oh, I didn't prepare.
I would turn into an earring gun from Techno Cheating. That's a good question, because I wrote it down also. An hour ago. You have to give us a minute to think about it.
I would be a taco truck, and my name would be Taco Sean.
I'm not sure I get, is that a deep cut? What is there a taco place called Taco Sean?
There's a place called Taco John's.
Oh.
But I just like tacos, and I thought it'd be kind of funny because Taco Sean sounds actually like a Transformer name, you know?
Okay.
Maybe if you mispronounce like Taco Sean. Taco Sean.
I like it.
That's like Shaka Khan.
Yeah. Plus, you know, I like tacos, so it'd be taco truck.
You have to say it like that all the time. Every time someone says your name, it's like, yes, I'm like, you're at a doctor's office, mm-hmm. and they're like, Taco Sean. The doctor is ready to see you now.
Taco Sean. Ratchet is ready to see you now.
Ratchet was their medical officer.
Who gets shot in the first 3 minutes?
Can we turn into anything? Even if it doesn't exist in our...
If you can be a microscope, you can be whatever the hell you want.
Okay. I would...
Let's start simple. Autobot or Decepticon?
I mean, I generally like to vote third party.
This isn't a third party system, okay. Lydia.
Okay, so it's Democrat, so obviously Autobot.
What are you?
Oh, as a car, I would definitely be an Autobot.
Yes. So I guess I wouldn't be a car. Oh, I know what I would be. I would be a TARDIS.
Yes.
I would be a TARDIS.
Yes.
It still does the whole moving around thing. But what would my name be?
You'd be a TARDless, because it would be time and relative, Lydia, in space.
TARDless. There we go. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Naomi. I'd be a TARDIS.
Did I say that wrong? Time and dimension?
No. It's fine. I'm just four. So for part of me is like,
TARDIS. So my name would be, I would be a TARDIS and my name would be TARDIS.
You got one?
Oh, I would be a DeLorean.
Nice.
Which would make me an Autobot. So it's got to have an Autobot sort of name. Autobots don't have so many of the like con or cron or the ones that are sort of like, you know, it's a very harsh sounding robotic name. The Autobots typically have like something that sort of just sounds mechanical, like
Ratchet, Hot Rod, Barricade,
yeah,
Bumblebee.
So I'm gonna say,
you could be called Doc
Ram.
Ram.
Nice. Ram.
You think you'd be a Dodge then, not a...
True.
Okay.
But for copyright reasons.
Okay. because I've had the longest time to think about this out of all of us now, I would turn into a mall kiosk mobile cart that sold knockoff Japanese kawaii kitty shirts where they're like munching on different kinds of food. And I would be called the Neko Nomicron. And I would obviously be a Decepticon, but no one would want to approach me because I would be a mall mobile kiosk. Natural defenses, baby.
That's a really good infiltration method right there.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a really nice shirt, B-Box. Rocksteady or whatever. Like, let's get this fancy. There's a cat eating a taco. Oh, that's like Taco Sean. Oh, no. And then I like, wah, 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 and I like.
So Bebop and Rocksteady are from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I know, but it's what came to mind when my mouth was moving.
Let's change to the next. Let's transition to the next.
Transform into this movie.
Review. Podcast.
Plot walkthrough.
Opening credits. Oh, no, wait a minute. Not opening credits. We have a peaceful, idyllic robot planet that is lively, and there are robot doctors with chemicals.
There are robot escalators.
There are robot children. We're children. We're children.
And weirdly mustaches on robots that serve no purpose.
It's like a bottle opener for your face.
And then what do we have but Planet Eater Omnicron. Also, like 80s cartoon nom nom noises.
Yeah.
It did go chomp, 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 chomp.
Okay, I will point out that I'm pretty sure I know what you're saying, but Omnicron is not his actual name.
Oh, it's Unicron.
It's Unicron.
Sorry, that's what my note said.
But as far as giant evil thing that's destroying the planet, Omnicron kind of matches that.
Yeah.
He's omnivorous.
Oh.
But when you actually go into his personality, he's also very assimilate Unicron, which is interesting when you look at America as such an individualist nation. You know, we don't like assimilation. Look at the Borg with Next Gen. We'll look with Unicron right now. Uni, like one, universal.
I thought he was just eating for energy.
Probably, but I mean, we're supposed to be looking at this deeper too.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
What's really messed up about Omnicron and the end of this movie? Remind me to tell you at the end of this movie.
Okay.
I'll make a note. Hold on. Unicron, chomp chomp. Oh, and then all of a sudden a beat starts playing, mm-hmm. And my brain goes, do you remember that Taylor Swift song, Shake It Off?
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, you're worried about, and you get down about those dirty, dirty liars when you could be getting down about this sick beat. That's the beat.
Are you saying Taylor Swift's a transformer?
It would explain her height.
Hmm.
It would explain the Cats movie.
Nothing explains a Cats movie.
You can listen to that in a past podcast, guys.
The artwork on that is really good. I think about that every now and then. I think Sean did really good artwork for our Cats episode. That was really good.
If we ever make merch, we'll get that on a shirt for you. Yeah. Don't worry.
P.S. I cannot wait for this episode's Transformer themed versions of your two faces. You going to draw a little shield face helmet thing?
I'll be missing a mouth.
I'll just draw one, and the next will be a mall kiosk.
I'll look like a TARDIS, and Naomi will look like, because we already talked about it.
Person scrolling through, one of the 12 listeners is going to scroll through and be like, the f*** is this? It says Transformers, but it's like a TARDIS, and then a kiosk with shirts with kittens on it, eating different things, a cat with a little boba tea. But then when you put it on, it constricts you, cues you.
So we do really get this nice metal version of the Transformers theme that all the kids would have been really familiar with.
My first moment of just sort of like, what the f*** was the opening credits, where it was, I was like, Eric Idle? Like Monty Python, Eric Idle? Judd
Nelson.
Judd Nelson from The Breakfast Club, Judd Nelson? And then I was like, who else are they going to get? Oh, I don't know who Robert Stack is. Oh, Robert Stack, the Unsolved Mysteries guy? Leonard Nimoy? Orson Welles? Like, that is literally like my first page of notes. Half of it is just with these credits. Oh, and I said, I predict Orson Welles will be the icing on the cake of that is this movie.
Yeah, he literally chews on the scenery.
Yeah, but it's fun.
A flutter, you don't know, but Jen just laughed really hard at her own joke.
It was very cute.
Okay, so Jen, how about you describe Peter talking to himself?
Oh, yeah. So we do initially start talking between Optimus Prime and Ironhide.
Right. There is narration. Would you like, I wrote down the narration. Would you like me to say the narration?
Yeah, but can you do a voice a little bit?
Yeah. It is the year 2005.
I've graduated high school by 4 years.
The treacherous Decepticons have conquered the Autobots' home planet of Cybertron. But from a secret staging grounds on two of Cybertron's moons, the valiant Autobots prepare to retake their home planet. And then it talks with Optimus Prime and Ironhide. I wrote it down right in my notes.
Ironside was a detective from the 70s who was in a chair.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it was a detective movie about a detective who was in a wheelchair called Ironside.
And it was terribly PC and, no, they and not ableist.
No, they remade it in like 2002. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I only know of it. I've never watched any episodes, so I can't speak to whether it was good or bad.
It was.
I got to guess. You liked it?
I mean, it's generic cop drama like Columbo style.
Oh, I do like Columbo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just, when I think of like a detective, I think about a lot of running around and stuff. And I feel like that would just like beat on somebody with a disability pretty hard.
Oh, no. This is more like we're going to gather everyone in a room and I'm going to sit there and pretend to like
I
know what I'm talking
do
about.
Like Hercules Poirot.
Yeah. Kind of like that Perry Mason sort of like, you know, just.
A big reveal.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
that stuff. Okay. Maybe I can check it out.
Murder, She Wrote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah. So then we have us, we have Ironhide, and there's a human with him. This is Spike, and they're talking. They're on one of the moon bases. I think they're on the second moon base or the first moon base.
So it's I want to say it's who? Okay, so there are two moon bases that Optimus and Ironhide are talking to. The first one is Bumblebee and Spike, maybe?
Yeah, because they show up later. Okay. Yeah, I should really default to you because you know this better than I do.
I'm forgetting which one. I think Bumblebee and Spike might have been second. Like, it was Jazz and I want to say it's Ratchet in the first ones. So Optimus asks Ironhide to report. Ironhide is like, when are we going to... Every time I look at my monitors, my circuits sizzle. And when are we going to start busting some Decepticon chops? And then Optimus is like, we don't have enough Energon cubes to launch a full-scale assault. And but they do... somewhere in there is a report between the two moons as well.
Right.
And so we do have... two people, we have a humanoid and a robot on one of those and two robots on the other.
And all of this is being looked over by...
Spybird.
The Spybird. I don't know, what was his name? Like, Claws?
Laserbeak.
Laserbeak, yep.
Taserface!
And Laserbeak is a little tape that folds up into Soundwave, and Shockwave says, hey, Laserbeak's back, and then... Megatron is like, that's great. I want what playback Laserbeak's findings. And then we get a recap of the just like 2 minutes ago.
Look, kids have a short attention span. I did have a note here where Megatron is like, heroic actions are heroic. That's kind of the gist of what he says. But he also I feel like if Megatron, because he's like, so you have this planet and then you have these two moons, right? And Megatron knows that his enemies are on these two moons and they're like real close. Now, I don't know anything about the space travel in Transformers. So, Jen, feel free to correct me on this. But it seems like it would take less energy to attack those two moons than it would to follow this random ship that is planning on going back to Earth specifically for Energon cubes, because that's something that Optimus Prime says is we need some Energon cubes and a lot of luck. And that's when I was like, Megatron, like, they're right there. They are right there. It does not, it's not going to take a lot of energy. And then when they come back, you're going to have those Energon cubes and you can take them because you'll have resource management guy. I'm just glad, you know, things happen to Megatron in this movie. It just makes me like, okay, well, yeah, you Ouroboros yourself.
Ouroboros?
Ouroboros? Yeah. He's a snake that ate his own tail.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is definitely, like, this takes, you know how I like to pay attention to a timeline a little bit? This takes a course over 2 days-ish. That's redonkulous. And so, like, in terms of travel between planets, like, none of that's relevant. Like, they do not. They yada, yada, yada that stuff right out of there.
Yeah, it's very much what is that in A Wrinkle in Time, A Tesseract, where you're like taking two points of space and merging them together so that way, you know, you can travel from point A to point B without time being relative.
Like in the movie It.
Yeah.
I was actually, that was one of my notes, is like, how far away is Earth from Cybertron? Because it seems like it's just like, oh, let me go to the corner store. Oh, we're here. Hey.
We got to go get some Energon cubes from the convenience store down the street.
They pretend to have moments of transition, like when they do that Luke fighting a robot ball thing where what's his face is fighting the robot while the other guy is telling a story to the robots and like, oh, the travel time. But like, it really is the only time they pretend to have space in between locations.
In the series, they were not, that there was too much distance between Cybertron and Earth, so they headed. They ended up building a sky bridge, which was like sort of a warp between the
like
two
in
planets.
Thor?
Yeah, basically like Thor.
Oh, and in Steven Universe,
and in Steven Universe, light warp. I'm trying to remember what it's called in Thor.
Oh, Sean. You know,
it's the thing that
it's the bridge in Thor,
the called. Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah,
it's an Einstein.
That's what I was
going to
call
bridge.
It, but I thought I was thinking about dead animals.
But what did they? But what did they call it? Something very specific in the Marvel universe, the Bifrost.
Oh yeah, the
it
Bifrost.
Can summon the Bifrost.
I mean, DC calls it a boom tube, but it's essentially the same thing.
Well, DC.
Like cheap writing,
like McDonald's. Look. Okay, we've
I ain't turning down that Mac sauce, okay? You know what I'm saying?
So the Decepticons know what the plan is going to be, that the Autobots are going to go to Autobot City, get enough Energon for a full-scale assault on the Decepticons. But now Megatron and the Decepticons know about their plan, and their plan is to basically kill everybody in the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Steal their ship and get enough access because the initial defense warnings will think it's an Autobot ship and it'll be fine to go in.
Yeah, like hijack the ship and go in, sort of like Star Wars, where they're like, we're going in with like Return of the Jedi, where right. We've stolen the ship and we're gonna use some old codes. And they will, like, in the first 5 seconds, what do they kill? Like, they kill Ratchet and Ironhide and like two other ones just really fast. It's like boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of death in this first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Also a very, very nice, I'm forgetting who does this first song, but the soundtrack for this movie just kicks. Like, I mean, it is a time capsule of 80s hair metal, even though it isn't like any of the biggest metal bands.
I would contend that this is one of the top 5 soundtracks of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah.
Like movie soundtracks?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay, since we're there, Stan Bush is one of the artists for the music on this, and he wrote the song Touch, which is frequently used, I think like 3 or 4 times, like, I've got the touch, do. 2 trivia quotes. The first one is he wrote the song based on some dialogue from Iron Eagle, the movie Iron Eagle with Louis Gossett Jr., and then it was originally supposed to be written for the 1986 Sylvester Stallone film Cobra.
Hmm. And then it was also used in Boogie Nights.
Yes,
really?
It also was used in Boogie Nights. Yep. It was, yeah.
What scene was that?
Mark Wahlberg is trying to make it back after like some really, I mean, it's like 3 quarters or more into the movie, and he's trying to make it sort of a a name for himself outside of porn.
So and, he's like trying to cover this song.
Yeah. And he sounds horrible.
Mark Wahlberg, as in Marky Mark Wahlberg, sounds horrible when doing this song.
Yep. You got the push.
And he was in a Transformers movie, right?
Who?
Mark Wahlberg.
Yep. Yeah.
it's the Triforce of You Got the Touch, You Got the Power.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy does make an appearance as a different Transformer in the movies. I think it's I want to say it's the third one. But
yeah, I actually have that when we were going to get to Leonard Nimoy. He plays, he plays the voice of Galvatron in this movie, but he later provided the voice of the Autobot turned traitor, Sentinel Prime, in Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Ooh.
Sorry if I just gave you a spoiler for a movie that's over
I probably 10 years old. I probably wouldn't have watched it. And okay. I love everything with Leonard Nimoy in it. So it's just like, oh, okay. Leonard Nimoy was in a Transformers movie before he died. That's cool.
Uh-huh.
Was that like a few months or like a few weeks before he died?
No, this is back in 2011. I think he died like
2016.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was that was the year for being a celebrity. You know, that was like, oh, I'm going to eat all the celebrity. That was the Unicron of celebrity deaths.
Yeah, I think the last thing he did besides Star Trek Into Darkness was episodes of Fringe, and they had to animate some of them.
Yeah.
You know what? With all the sadness, maybe we cut to a fishing scene?
Dano and Hot Rod. Oh, and when I heard that his name was Dan, I was like, Daniel is driving tonight on a plane.
I can see the red tail eyes.
Heading for Spain. I'm sure there's a nice way to, you know, make that into a little bit more Transformers, but I'm not clever enough for that.
Was that bad? Jen's daughter at it. Do it. Now, you do a TARDIS noise.
It's good. I like it.
Okay.
So Hot Rod and Daniel are talking, and Daniel's looking really low, and Hot Rod asks him, hey, what's the matter? And Daniel says, oh, nothing, Hot Rod. I guess I just missed my dad. Hot Rod says, don't worry, Spike, that's his actual name. Spike will be back soon. Spike is now like... I mean, he was a teenager in the series, and now this is quite a bit. Yeah, I suppose it's more than 5 years after.
Well, no, the series was in 1985, so Spike was like a kid, and this is 20 years later in 2005. So they upped the age of Spike. He's an adult now.
So this is the Dragon Ball Z of the Dragon Ball universe. Because Goku started out as a kid in Dragon Ball, then he was an adult in Dragon Ball Z. I'm going to be doing all the anime references, guys.
Isn't it that's the same studio?
Yeah, Tao Animation. I think I might be saying that wrong. Please feel free to correct us and engage with that algorithm.
Yes, please. So Hot Rod catches a fish, and they cut to a perspective of Daniel looking at the fish, and it looks really big, and he says, wow, look at the size of it. And then we cut to a perspective of Hot Rod, who is at least four times taller than Daniel, holding this teeny tiny fish on his line. And he says, yeah, it's a whopper, all right. And then Daniel gets a GPS notification that the shuttle is coming in, and he wants to watch it land. And Hot Rod thinks that's the dullest thing ever.
But little does Hot Rod know that because Dan's watching this, he notices that there's a hole in the side of the ship, and there are Decepticons coming!
Right. They, like, get it, what is it, Hot Rod transforms into a car, and he picks up Daniel and puts him inside of himself.
Not until after we see Daniel jump on a hoverboard, and I say to that, where is my hoverboard?
We had hoverboards. They exploded. Do you not remember the early aughts?
No.
Can you really call them hoverboards? They had wheels.
Oh, I guess they did. That was the closest thing that we had to hoverboards.
Now we have hoverboards, and they still have wheels.
This is another, what's his name? What's his last name? Bush?
Bush.
George W. Bush?
No, the musician.
Oh, the musician. Blah, 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 blah. Stan.
Stan Bush?
Stan Bush.
Troy Stan Bush.
Stan Bush's other song in this movie. Right? I mean, he might have three, but this is Dare.
Am I singing that right?
Yeah, okay, that's good. Exactly the words. Dare. Dare is a place where dreams are alive. I think
so. There's two songs that are like Dare.
One's You've Got the Touch. That's we have not heard that song yet in the movie.
The one that I'm alluding to.
Right. But Dare is the one that we start out with.
Okay.
And Daniel crashes his hoverboard. Hot Rod says, if you're going to ride, Daniel, ride in style. And throws Daniel, catches Daniel in his little cockpit of a...
It would break every bone in my body.
Well, not if they were being gentle with you. And like imagine like you're about to fall, but then you don't fall like a few feet. You fall like maybe a foot into, you know, a hand that's like
the soft interior of your Autobot friend.
Well, I mean, they are like, you know, I mean, if you're going to make up a robot that can transform into a car, you may as well have the best seats available to you.
Did you ever watch that episode of Robot Chicken? Where the transformer picked up the two kids and drove the car, and then he got to the place and it instantly transformed, and all of a sudden, like, the blood starts pouring out from inside, and he's like, oh, crap. And I'm like... that made me laugh.
Isn't Pete Davidson going to be Wheeljack in this next movie?
Oh, Pete Davidson.
We live in a weird world.
You know, someone once told me that humor is sexy, and that guy must be the funniest mother I've ever seen.
No, it's because he has a big...
He does have big energy.
I don't want to know that.
You're not familiar?
Well, you know...
Sorry, Sean, I didn't mean it.
Oh, no, it's okay, it's okay.
For other references to big energy, go listen to our episode about Dinner for Schmucks.
Oh, yeah. We talk about that excessively.
Yeah.
So they get to the top of Lookout Mountain, and Daniel is looking through the viewfinder, and he says, Hot Rod, look, and Hot Rod zooms in, sees a hole in the shuttle, zooms in a little bit more, and he announces Decepticons, and then he starts shooting at the ship. And then we get introduced to Cup, who is doing some construction work outside of Autobot City.
And they've just driven through his barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like, I'll teach you someday.
Is Cup like the oldest like Autobot there? Like,
it's got to be.
I mean, I don't know. He comes off with like that old guy energy, like from like old Western movies, like, I remember back when it was like I had to walk 10 miles to get to school.
Yeah. Yep. He's voiced by Lionel Stander, who is also a detective in some show. I don't remember which one.
This is the third action scene that we have. The third fight scene.
Mm-hmm. We're like less than 10 minutes in, guys. Yeah. So strap into your respective Autobots. Right. Here we go.
And then we are introduced to that. Is that when they start is that when the Decepticons start their attack? And then they're like, we have to notify Optimus Prime. And then Guy turns into Boombox. And is that?
That is Blaster.
Blaster.
Mm-hmm. I was informed that his name is Blaster, not Ghetto Blaster, although he is one. But his name is technically Blaster.
We also, before we get to the point where we can notify Optimus Prime, we get introduced to the next generation of toys, basically. Every new toy, aside from Hot Rod and Cup that we've already seen, is now introduced with... There's Perceptor, which he was already there. He's there. And then there's also Blur. Blur is played by... Is his name Dan? Dan Mish?
I actually have that down as a thing. It is the voice of Blur is John Muschietta Jr., who is listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's fastest talker. You might remember him, if you're as old as us, as the guy that did the Micro Machine commercials.
Now he's playing a car.
I also think he had like an infomercial where he'd teach you to read and speak as fast as he did. And I wanted that. And I never got it.
You'd be so good at the TikToks.
Yeah, you could get so much information in a minute.
Unfortunately, in the script, they have Blur just basically repeating himself over and over again really, really fast. Like, he says a really short sentence, but he says it over and over and over again.
Or he says, like, different variations of the same thing.
Yeah, it doesn't show off the guy's real range.
I still don't like Blur. He's my least favorite. Yeah.
He
looks cool, though.
Yeah, He's got what the he's got trails. He's got blue trails. However he moves, which is really cool and very 80s. And also there's Springer, who is a triple changer. He does a helicopter and a car. And there's RC, who is the female Transformer. There are some other female Transformers introduced in the cartoons, but she's basically it.
Are you ready for this? This is my RC Sean facts.
Yeah.
Sean facts for RC.
Sean facts.
You want me to play it? Oh, that's the wrong one.
Sean facts.
Sean facts.
RC edition.
The original demands of Hasbro for the toy line and cartoon series was that there was to be no female Transformers, as the toys were marketed strictly towards boys. However, the writer of this, Ron Friedman, fought real hard to include female Transformers because his daughter liked Transformers and wanted to see a girl. So he created RC. She debuted in this movie. She was the first female Autobot. However, she didn't get her own figure until 2014. And so she was created in 1985 and didn't get her own toy until 2014. Keep in mind, this movie was designed to sell toys. They still didn't sell a toy of the only female Transformer for like another 20 years? 30 years.
30 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And then people ask what the patriarchy is. That's the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to make a joke that said, and with that, the patriarchy ended. But then you brought up the fact that it took 30 years for her to get a toy. And I was like, no, this is going to be an educational experience.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a movie designed to sell toys, and you're not even making a toy of the character in the movie.
And that's what's interesting about it. It's like you have this whole demographic that you could pull from, like a little girls being interested in things that are primarily or dominantly promoted to boys, and you know, boys who are interested in things that are primarily being promoted to girls. You have these whole markets. Why not dip into it? If you are such a capitalist, then go ahead and actually expand your market.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining us for part one of our month-long review of 1986's The Transformers, the Movie. We're especially excited to have Sean with us for some great facts, along with our full-length plot walkthrough, and concluding at the end of February with our shocked and applaudable moments. Interested in some more great film discussions? Join Ben, Emily, Wes, and friends in I Drink Your Podcast on their journey through the 2010s as they revisit, review, and creatively revise the movies they've come across. And on I Hate It, Let's Watch It, Don and Lisa watch shows and movies they love to hate and hate to love, then rip them apart. You can find links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and a person with more than meat and eyes, Jen. Do you engage in human activities such as cursing and wish our podcast didn't rely on robot overlords to correct our most human of behaviors? Why not become an official applauder on Patreon for only $1 per month? You'll not only help us pay for our monthly hosting costs, but we'll also get a full access pass to all of our unbleeped episodes. Just click on the Become an Applauder link on shockedandapplaud.com to get started. We'll be back next week for part two of this animated destroyer of 80s childhood. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.